Right, hello. This is Jerry from Between Consensus and Conspiracy podcast. Got a little bit of intro music this week. It's a friend of mine called Steve Lee who's just released it, Music and Emotions, it's called. And I might play it towards the end just to play the whole track to fade out, because it's quite nice. It bounces along quite nicely. Yeah, so this is a podcast between Consensus and Conspiracy with Jerry, me and my brother Julian. And we talk about some of the going-ons in the world. And last time we did one, we said we would do an update on the our observations for the US election. And I was thinking, but there's quite a lot of stuff going on over here with vaccines and lockdowns and stuff like that. But maybe we'll save that for one before Christmas and get this election stuff out of the way. Are you okay?
Yeah, all good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? One thing, from one day to the next, you bounce around, don't you?
Well, it's eventful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't get boring. Kind of gets frustrating sometimes. I don't know. I think because we're in lockdown now. We weren't in lockdown when we did the last one, and the thought of having another one, I didn't think would happen. This one's not too bad I don't know. I intended. The kids are at school, which makes it easier because I don't feel guilty.
Yeah, big difference.
Yeah,
I know. It's compared to the original one in whatever it was, the end of March. It was quite eerie because there was very little traffic, hardly anyone on the street. There's new to everyone, wasn't it? Now, to be honest, I do the school run. It's pretty much a normal day, you know.
Yeah.
And people are around. I went to the playground a couple of weeks back on the first weekend, and it was fucking zoo. It was insane. There's so many people around.
Yeah.
And the coffee shops, a queue around the block for the coffee shops. I suppose there's very little for people to do, you know. So they congregate in certain places, which isn't great. But it's a totally different feel from the last one.
Kind of reassuring as well that you're confident that things will go back to normal to a certain extent. I understand that they're going to try and shape things so we don't necessarily go back to the exact normal, because, you know, I think we do need to change some things. And there's never a better time to change than when, you know, everyone's kind of... It's like one of them machines, you know. You remember those machines where, like a kid's machine, which was grey, and you had an up-down knob and a left-right knob, and you could draw on it. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah, Etch-a-Sketch. But when you turn it upside down and you give it a shake, you could start all over again. And I suppose the coronavirus was the upside down, give it a shake, and now they want to start it again. But then that gives us a whole...
It's like a globalist there, Jerry.
Oh, yeah. Well, that just gives us a whole new load of stuff to argue about, like the Great Reset. But it's like anything, the Great Reset... The people on the left are sending me stuff to say, look, it's a globalist kind of redoing, and, you know, these people are really shady. They seem like Nazis and they want to, you know, change everything in their way. And then I've got people on the right saying it's a Marxist takeover and this, that and the other. So anything can be shaped how you want it, can't it? I mean, to me, maybe naively, I think, look, if we're going to try and... The world is changing really, really quickly. Technology... is changing it, and we need to try and create a system that is fairer and divvy stuff up more evenly, and if we can do that, then all well and good. But then that means you need to trust the competence of the people in charge, and you know who does. But just a quick update on last week's, because sometimes I listen back and there was a couple of things that I wasn't massively happy about, so I'm just trying to go over them. I think I was talking about that the parasite, and I couldn't even remember if it was a parasite or a virus, but the parasite that goes from cats to mice, which was toxoplasmosis, and I couldn't remember its name and I bodged it up. And it was basically that a parasite can go from one species, the cat, into the mouse, which turns off the instincts of the mouse, which protected it from the cat. So a parasite goes from the cat into another species, but helps the cat and causes problems for the mice. So the natural scary thing, that the natural fear that a mouse has of a cat, it switches off, and it also makes it attracted to cats' wee, which endangers it more. And I was just thinking that so often we look out at space and the vastness of the big, but there's also so little that we know of the tininess of the small. You know, if that's just one parasite of one species, and that's the beauty of evolution over millions of years, hundreds of thousands of years or millions of years, has done that sort of stuff. How much is that in there that we don't know? So anyway.
Well, yeah, and as well, it's like you could lose yourself, and people do, in the study of the minuscule, couldn't you? Mm. You know what I mean? Just one little bug on the back ear of a dog somewhere, you know? Yeah. Because there could be a whole like world of research.
Yeah.
And is enough for a lot of kind of academics. And then you're saying on the other scale, you've got fucking people like touting kind of conspiracy theories, going back to the name of our podcast, that seem to know the answer to everything.
Yeah. That's exactly the point, isn't it? You know, there's so much certainty when we know so little. If out of all the information in the world, if we knew 0.11%, yet we seem to know everything. And that kind of brings me up to the second point that I wanted to talk about, because I mentioned Churchill last week, didn't I? And I was saying that, not like a couple of last podcasts, that I could listen to a 50-hour book with each chapter. You could write another cartload of books on each chapter, because the book only kind of goes over the surface. And I was trying to think of some of the big things associated with Churchill, and I could only think of one of the smaller ones, which is the Boer War, which happened when he was really young. But I could have chosen Dunkirk, I could have chosen D-Day, could have chosen the bombing of Dresden, the Bengal famine, all the, you know, it's falling out with feminists and all sorts of stuff. You know, there are other issues in India, Gallipoli as well. So there are loads of, and each one of those, you could get 20, 30, 40, 100 books. And you could read two books, one coming from a supportive position and one coming from a critical position, which miles apart as well. So who do we believe? We tend to believe who we want to believe. We tend to believe the ones that back up what we already believe and tend to dismiss the stuff that we don't. But I listened to a podcast called, you know, Dan Carlin podcast. He's been doing one of the War in the Pacific.
Oh,
okay. And God, it's just extraordinary. The level of violence and horror that the people there for fighting the Japanese had, it's mind-blowing. And it's only three generations away. And I remember listening to another history podcast that made the Martyr made. He made the point that throughout human history, we've had atrocious wars. So it's only our generation that may, and that's only in the West, by the way. You're talking about other parts of the world, it's less. Three generations away of absolute horror, where there must be vast amounts of untreated post-traumatic stress that are just getting passed down from generation to generation. And you look at, you know, war-torn parts in other parts of the world, you know, we're talking about that's happening now, or even the one generation ago. And we really do give each other a really hard time about the ugliness of humanity. But I come from the opposite side. I'm surprised that we do so well, considering the amount of ugliness that we see.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you look at the beheadings and stuff, at the stories of beheadings that the Japanese did. When they ran out, there were cases where they ran out of salt, when they didn't have knives, they would wedge alive soldiers' heads in between forks and trees and twist their heads off. You know, this, and then all of a sudden, we're willing to then criticise some human rights abuses when the side that's had that done to them gets their hand on people, on opposite soldiers who are determined never to give up, because the Japanese were determined never to give up. Oh, mate, honestly, the levels of horror that you read. But the point of it was the whole Churchill thing, was that bit from his book where one of his men got shot by accident by another one of his men, and they didn't want to tell the family that it was killed by friendly fire. So they kind of made up a story that made it out that the person was a hero, and then that full story becomes family legend. And how much of what we think of is true within all of us is actually true? Because they reckon in the War in the Pacific, over 25% of Allied soldiers were killed through friendly fire. He's fighting in forests and woods with sometimes 4 foot vision and stuff like that.
But that's you just saying that it does make you think, doesn't it? That none of us are that far away from it. Mm. We do a brilliant job, like you just said, that we do a really good job of disguising it and kind of getting on with our normal lives. Just getting on the bus, on the tube, getting like not bumping into people in the street, and just not too far down there is this like level of insanity that is just a kind of flick of a switch away, you know.
And it's just so little empathy, you know. We're so, you know, this is my issue with a lot of the environment now, is we want to shit on people all the time. There's very little attempt to understand. And I remember just a book that I finished called The Boy Crisis. You remember that Warren Farrell, is it? Is it Warren Farrell, the guy? Yeah. And he made a point that boys were expected to do dangerous jobs and expected to go to war throughout history. So they talk about the debt that the average life of men throughout history was significantly lower than women. One, because we did more dangerous jobs, and two, because we were at war all the time. But because of that, families evolved at an emotional distance. So boys didn't delve into emotion and families didn't delve into emotion and love. Because, but in the back of their mind, subconsciously, they knew at some point it could be taken away early. And I my issue with that is now, because of that, which I think that there should be a level of mourning for boys, now that's seen as toxic masculinity, you know, and we're criticised for it. What for? What we haven't, you know, I am I can't help the fact that I'm kind of emotionally shallow. I think it's something that's happened that is pretty sad. I think that's something we should feel sorry for, boys and men, rather than something that should be kind of crapped on, you know.
But of course, but it's balance as well, as in as everything in life, and it's you kind of almost don't want to go too far the other way, just in case you do need to get it back.
Yeah, no, of course.
You said if only we're only like 3 generations away, and most throughout history, that is what we've lived. That's been our reality, isn't it? So yeah. I think we kind of kid off. Think that we're not gonna live that reality at some point in the near future, and if you have kind of effeminized all these blokes, and they're not going to be much good for anything. Well, if hopefully it doesn't, but if it does kick off, then you know, you just need that balance, don't you?
Yeah, listen, barbarians come over the hills. Who's gonna, you know, who's gonna be there? Not the gender fluid lot. I wouldn't have thought, you know, and the point is made in the book that there are male traits that have evolved, and those have only evolved because they were attractive to females. So certain aspects about masculinity that are there, masculine traits are there because females liked it, and that's why the men with the more masculine traits were able to breed at a higher level. Problem with it is those masculine traits were probably needed in yesterday's world. In today's world, they're needed less. So there is an issue that now, if you look at the jobs that are going to be that are going to come into the future, are more face to face, dealing with individuals, emotional, high emotional jobs. So again, it's kind of less suited to the traits that we used to have. So that's the point of the book, was that we need to try and bring up sons. To definitely try and get in touch with their emotional side to prepare themselves for the new type of world, which I think is an interesting point. But and the other part, that the last bit that I was saying, was that we were talking about Trump not being authoritarian. First of all, we recorded one on Sunday, didn't we? Or Sunday night, but it cocked up. So a bit's changed between now and Sunday. So this is going to reflect to our conversation we had on Sunday, was that I said that we, on our last podcast, we were saying that Trump, we said he's not an authoritarian. And then I said that since the election, maybe he is showing some signs of authoritarianism, and you didn't agree. And I think that what's happened between now and Sunday makes you right more than I was right. Because
I think I've said it since the start. I never got the whole kind of like after what, a week or two in, that he was Hitler, and it was just far too extreme. I think the guy's so easily readable. He's just, he is what he is. He's, yeah. You can read it on the packaging, you know?
No, you're right, yeah.
He's like, the egomaniac, and he loves himself. He's all about himself, what he can get out of other people to help himself.
Yeah.
And that's it. I think this like denial of the election result is exactly what lots of people would expect in a contested election. I mean, the whole kind of COVID thing screwed it up, and that by kind of fudging it and loads more postal ballots. And I think a lot of people predicted that this was a possibility months and weeks ago. And look, any excuse for him to kind of contest it. But, and I think it'll just push it through the courts. They'll get knocked back one by one. And over the next few weeks, he'll concede. I've never thought he's this guy. He's definitely, as Ben Shapiro says, he's not going to be kind of holed up in the White House like Al Pacino in Scarface.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen, you know.
Yeah, and I think ever since Sunday, it seems that he is conceding slowly, but he's a narcissist, isn't he? I think that's indisputable, so he's not going to take that on the chin.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, I think so. The court, and this is the other thing. This is what I was thinking, is this an element of hypocrisy, or is this not a fair comparison? But do you remember the Trump thing about the Mexican judge? Do you remember there was that situation where he was being investigated for his university stuff? And a judge was of Mexican origin, and he made the point, well, how can a Mexican judge, Mexican judge, after me saying all about building the wall, he's not going to treat me fairly. And everybody was outraged because they said, now you're bringing discredit to the courts, because courts are independent and a judge is independent. And then I was thinking, yeah, okay, so now what we're talking about now is what Trump has seemed to have done is loaded the courts with conservative judges, and everybody's saying now, oh no, now he's going to use his judges to push through a win for an election which he's lost, because conservative judges are going to back Trump. But isn't that the mirror image of what Trump said about Mexican judges?
I'm not sure, look,
I'm willing to accept that there is a difference. It might not be a fair comparison, but you're still questioning the bias of a judge. And every judge so far in the contested states, as far as I can see, are conservative judges that are kicking it back.
So it
seems that to me, the American Constitution, when it was written, was a thing of genius, in my opinion. Because it put in loads of safeguards, so that because they understood that give some people too much power, that power can be corrupted. So they set up all these different safety things so that wouldn't happen, and they separated the where authority lies. You've got the presidency, but you've got the courts, which is the courts, obviously, and then on the other side you've got the House and the Senate. So you've got three areas of a thing, and it stood and it's held throughout Trump. I think Trump has given it the biggest test in recent history, and it's held. I think he's been a bit of an arse.
I'm never that critical of him. I think people would gather from a lot of these podcasts, but the one thing I will say, I'm really critical of this part of it, because I don't like the way that, I understand why he's doing it, why he's contesting the election, but I think it kind of leaves, I think it's a little bit dangerous, because it just adds to this idea in some on the right that the whole game's rigged against them, and it just pours fuel on the fire of this distrust that everyone's got.
Yeah.
In relation to everything, in relation to the media, in relation to politicians, in scientists, whatever. It's just adding to that, and I don't think that's a good thing. Look, and I've always said, he's not the reason it exists.
Yeah.
The reason it exists goes way back. He's just part of it, isn't he?
But this
he's,
is
he's
what,
a response to it.
Yeah, and that's what we said. But
I don't like this side of it.
No.
I think you should just give up gracefully. And
we said that from day one, from the first podcast, I remember. And the other issue is, it's not conservative, is it? Conservatives like to conserve, and conservatives have respect for the structures of authority of a state. That is one of the key parts of conservatism. So if you're now creating a high level of distrust from a minority, but a significant proportion of the population, that you as an individual, a figure of authority, are stoking up this distrust within a proportion. I mean, we also talk about division, about not liking division. This is awful. I agree with you. It's probably one of the worst things he's done.
No doubt. Look, the result itself. I've had conversations with people who are a bit more left-leaning than me, and they're like trying to kind of make out that this was a good result. I think we can categorically say there's no way that this was a good result for the Democratic Party.
No,
they're like I think it's phenomenal. I always thought he might win it, but I didn't expect him to get. What did he get? He got 70-odd million votes, didn't he? I mean, yeah. Look, you've got. What was it, 94% negative media coverage? You got pretty much, apart from Fox, every other news channel against him, most politicians around the world, celebrities, sports stars, just everyone.
Social media, censoring voices.
Tech companies donating to the Democratic Party, the Wall Street donating to the Democratic Party, and it was that close.
Yeah.
Starting saying, I mean, the Democrats should have won it walking away. And the fact that they still haven't won back the Senate, and they lost seats in the House, and all the other losses, all they got out of it essentially was a Biden win, which is probably going to be a bit of a struggle because it looks like I would hazard a guess that the Republicans are going to hold the Senate.
There's two more seats that were too close, weren't they? So Georgia and somewhere else. So they've got a rerun in. The Republicans have got a 2-seat lead, and there's 2 seats up for grabs in January.
Yeah, one of them was tight. The other one wasn't that tight when you take into account that the Republican vote was split between two candidates.
Oh, right, okay. Libertarian.
I think it was it was roughly kind of like 25%, 35%, 35%. So, yeah. But 25 and 35 were on the Republican side.
Yeah.
So I can't see it happening. It may do, but I just don't think, with Trump not on the ticket, it's going to be a struggle to get the people out to vote that they need to get out to vote to take those seats.
Well, the Democrats need to win both of them, and then they've got an equal amount of seats, and because they've got an equal amount of seats, and because they're in charge of the presidency, they get the deciding vote, don't they? So it's definitely in the Republicans have got an advantage there. But so it's like our Lords, isn't it? They can't really get a lot of changes through unless it's agreed by the Senate. But I mean, listen, this contested stuff isn't anything new. I think it started sort of, 20-odd years ago, didn't it, with the hanging chads with George Bush and stuff. So that took weeks to go through. And then the Democrats at that point always had there was always a cloud over George Bush because they thought it was stolen. And then when Obama came in, all the Kenyan stuff and the birther stuff, and then that was the rise of the Tea Party. There was a significant amount of Republicans that didn't accept Obama as a real, inverted commas, American. And then after the Trump thing, it was all this fake and Brexit, Facebook, Cambridge Analytica, Hillary Clinton, even up until a couple of weeks ago, was saying it was stolen. So it's pretty even. It's not just him putting distrust on democracy itself. I mean,
no, and he's within every right to do what he's doing, essentially. Yeah. I mean, he goes over the top when he says that he won the election. It's all a scam.
Yeah.
And they seem to be kind of like a lot of his lawyers are kind of losing face, or they seem to be claiming that they've got this massive vote fraud. And it's like, when are we going to see the proof of this? Keep on having these fucking press conferences claiming that stuff is
the Kraken is coming. All I keep hearing is the Kraken is coming.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
When is it coming? Just show us.
Yeah. I don't even know what
it's obviously nonsense, but he's within his rights to do it, you know?
He's within his rights to contest stuff, yeah, he is. But, you know, the stuff I definitely won the election was stolen tweets in all capital letters is mad, isn't
yeah.
it? I thought of a joke. Yeah. I thought of a joke a little while back that would have suited a friend of ours who used to have a laugh because he was quite selfish. And then he came to a conclusion that he wasn't selfish anymore. I'm not sure if he was selfish was the right word. He's kind of really self-centred. He could never see things from another point of view. But I cracked a joke. I thought of a joke that I never really had a chance to use on him. But it works on Trump quite well. That he's so selfish that he'd unplug a life support machine to charge his mobile phone, right? And it does suit, you know, it does suit Trump, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I just think, but you know what I found quite interesting was I know you're familiar with Glenn Greenwald. I don't know how many listeners are, but Glenn Greenwald is a bit of a kind of off-piste in a journalist, isn't he? He's American, and he helped break the WikiLeaks stuff with the Guardian and the New York Times or Washington Post, wasn't it? And also the Christopher Snowden stuff.
Edward Snowden.
Yes. Christopher Snowden.
He was the guy behind the Edward Snowden story,
yeah.
wasn't he?
Yeah.
He put a lot on the line for that story.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And he and he's Brazilian, isn't he? He's gay. He's got a young Brazilian boyfriend, a partner now. I think they've got children. And I think that was used against him, wasn't it, by the British media? They really tried to discredit him. And look, there's a lot of stuff I don't like about Glenn Greenwald. He, on the Islamic terrorism stuff, I didn't agree with him. And a lot of the older trans stuff that he's done 6 months ago, I didn't agree with him. However, he was on Joe Rogan the other week, and I think Joe Rogan talked about his issues with trans stuff. And Glenn Greenwald moved quite a lot. So I think that, you know, if you put a good argument, he moves. But Glenn Greenwald,
he is quite lefty, isn't he?
Yeah. He's quite strong left, yeah. But he set up with someone else an outlet called The Intercept, because he wanted more freedom in what stories and the stories that he wrote. And he was one of the people that wrote about Hunter Biden in the run-up to the election, about crookedness and a laptop that was found by Bond. On a laptop was taken into a repair shop, wasn't it? And there was a load of stuff on there, incriminating stuff that Rudy Giuliani managed and Bannon managed to get their hands on, and it coincidentally dropped just before the election. So I get that it was the same thing with the emails prior to the last election. But the fact of it is, there were recordings of stuff, there was imagery of stuff. It was a valid story, right? However, nearly all of the media wouldn't run that story. We talked about it last week. And what happened was, he tried to write a story for The Intercept, and The Intercept wouldn't allow it to be written. So he left The Intercept. And he made a point that prior to the last election, the Hillary Clinton one, there was evidence that came that the DNC, the Democratic National Congress, when Hillary was going up against Bernie Sanders, that they stitched it all up in favour of Hillary ahead of Bernie Sanders. And some of the people that were helping her were on her staff, they found their emails. Now, that was a story. And what happened was, I think Comey then reinvestigated it 2 or 3 days before the election, but they couldn't get the result till after the election. And a lot of people said that that was the reason why Hillary Clinton lost. So the next 4 years, those companies were chastised and blamed for running those stories, which led to Trump being in power. And in the 4 years, there's been a drip of that. And I think that's social media as well. Look at Facebook. Look at the pressure Facebook's come under. Look at the pressure Twitter's come under. And then if you look at the board members of Facebook and Twitter, a lot of people that are now on the board, the controlling board of those companies, have come directly from Democratic politics. And it's clear that there has been a level of censorship within those companies against Donald Trump. And to me, the question is, and what I think is that we've got a certain, like if you imagine a train tracks, you can be slightly left as a leader, you could be slightly right, but you have to fit within the train tracks. If you go outside of the train tracks, whether on the right or the left, then the machine starts to come in and close you down. And in a sense, I understand that. And in a way, that's kind of reassuring, because I think you could argue you saw similar over here with Jeremy Corbyn. You know, the whole machine does seem to go against him, to drip discredit him. Now, I think in both cases that there are valid areas to look at, and I think in a way it's reassuring. But on the other side of the coin, it is going against democracy in a way, which is why I think in another way it's a bit not reassuring. And the question now is was that used as a one-off? And if it was used as a one-off, then I personally think it could be, you know, it could blow over. But is this now the way it's done for any Republican leader that comes through? And I think that would be dangerous, because I think the Jonathan Haidt book that I mentioned, that our political persuasion, up to 50% of our political persuasion is correlated with personality traits. So often, if you're orderly and you believe in structure, you like tidiness, all little things like that linked to a conservative mindset. And if you're more artistic and creative, it does kind of link to a more leftist mindset. The problem that we have with politics is that too many people on either side think they're right and want to eradicate the other side. And now that's never going to happen, because if you look at most elections, they're roughly 50-50. So you've got to, you know, it only works if you learn to live with the other group. If we try and eradicate the other group, that's when I think a more toxic side of the other group starts to rise, and that's when you have problems. So that was my thought, is if it's a one-off, it's fine, but I suspect it's not going to be a one-off. I suspect this is the way they do things now, and I think that could be equally as damaging to democracy and trust in democracy. Time will tell, but I don't think they're going to change. I think it's too, especially media companies, it's too, hysteria is too profitable.
Is it? They've kind of, in a weird way, they've kind of shot themselves in the foot, unless they can carry on, which kind of speaks to your point, I suppose, that they're going to have to, with Trump, they kind of uncovered a bit of a gold mine, didn't they? Because all these companies have made profits out of just constantly blasting his name. And I think for a lot of people, I came to the conclusion that, like, oh, fuck me, I could do without having to think about the guy every day of the fucking week for the next 4 years. But there's no doubt that the media have profited off him. They've also profited off this whole kind of, like, culture war, kind of, I hate you, you hate me thing. And so, you know, in a weird way, I mean, it's going to be a struggle to get anyone who's anything like Trump I mean, maybe it'll be one of his kids or something, I don't know, or maybe even him again in 4 years, who knows. But I think anyone kind of mainstream, they'll try it, because they tried it with George Bush, and they tried it with Romney, and they tried it with all sorts. I mean, it was Biden who said about Romney in some political meeting in the South that Romney wanted to put your, like, talking to a room full of black people, Romney wants to put your back in chains.
Yeah.
I like the way he put on the southern black drawl as well. It's a bit racist, but hey, it might sound okay. And it's like, so that's been going on for 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt they'll try and use it with the next one, but it's whether it'll work as strongly, because... And also, look, and this is what this whole election was all about, wasn't it? And that's what fascinated me more than any of it. The fact that, as I said, 94% of media were negative stories. The fact that you've got this entire machine against someone, and he still managed to get, 73 million people voting for him?
Yeah, and
more than Obama and either term. It's like phenomenal. Yeah.
I think
there's something else there. There's a real mistrust of the media.
Yeah. Look, and I think the other extraordinary thing is that they've gone so big on identity, yet they've, you know, higher amounts of black men. I'm not sure women, but I know. I think
yes, I remember. Yep.
Look. It's from a low start, so it might be. It's either 4 to 8 yeah. or 8 to 6. I think it might be 8% to 16%. So listen, it is from a low start, but it has doubled. I mean, we're not talking about total because you could, by you saying he's got more votes, yeah, but loads more people voted. But so it could be argued that. However, if you look talking about proportion, that is difficult to argue against because it's gone from a percentage to a double that percent. So black men have voted for Trump at twice the rate as they did 4 years ago. Hispanics have gone up quite a large jump, which had people saying that they shouldn't be classed as people of color anymore, right? You know, left-wing commentators. Muslim people shot up as well. And gay and LGBTQ plus shot up as well. And people are a bit astonished, but I'm not really astonished. It's only astonishing if you think that people should vote based on identity. And that's what I, you know, even with the stuff, you know, like, Some elections in Africa where they're held in tribal areas and people vote with tribe. I always thought that's a bit, is that real democracy in a way? Because you're not, well, I suppose it is a way in a sense, but you're not looking at the issues, you're looking at identity. And then it's the same with Iraq, wasn't it, when they brought elections to Iraq. But people are going to vote on religious lines. They're going to vote. Shia had the majority after being led by Sunnis for years. And is that real democracy? But to me, it's kind of obvious. If you look, a friend of mine, a school friend of mine, sent me an article, the type of article that I've read 100 of probably since Brexit, that thinks it's intelligent, but to me it's just a bit stupid, where he said that the reasons why Hispanic people were voting for Trump is because they've been brainwashed that the Democrats are socialist, and that's the only reason why. It's so condescending. You know, it's just basically, it's the same old argument, oh, they're just stupid, they don't understand. But I've read loads of articles and watched interviews with people from Hispanic origin that live close to the border, and they want strong borders. You know, there is a lot of crime. There is a lot of gangs in South America. So there's a lot of carnage. They don't want people coming in, setting up gangs in their area so that their kids end up getting dragged into drug dealing. And also, if you're bringing in a lot of people that are low skilled, it's going to put pressure on low skilled labour and jobs and income. So it makes total sense why people from a Hispanic background would vote. Also, Coleman Hughes made a point that the labelling of that group, that new label of that group, Latinx it's called, because it used to be Latino, but Latino is male, Latina is female. So using Latino is sexist, so they're going to make it Latinx. However, when surveyed, Latinas didn't like that. Something like 94%. But the people pushing it, like Alessandra Ocasio-Cortez and a load of middle-class white women, saying basically your language is a bit problematic, so we're going to save you from it, even though you're too ignorant to do it. So that might be a little bit of a turn-off. As for black people... Yeah, as for black people, they might not be... If you're living in a rough area, you might not want to defund the police. You might want a bit of law and order when you see your streets being smashed up and your favourite restaurants being smashed up and you see people in restaurants being forced to put their hands up in the air, being bullied. People might not like that sort of stuff, so that doesn't surprise me. Gay men, Andrew Sullivan speaks really well of it. Gay men might not agree with it being forced down your throat that gender doesn't exist. Because if gender is just a social construct, then homosexuality doesn't exist. And they don't like that. So it makes sense. As for Asians who have voted Republican in higher amounts, well, they've got more obstacles to get their kids into schools, into the top schools. If it was solely based on results, they would be in those schools at something like about 70 or 80%, and they don't want to do it. They did the admissions did that to Jews, didn't they, like 40, 50 years ago, because Jewish people were getting in at a higher rate when it was solely based on academic scores. So they have to nobble it so that they don't take over and other minorities get in with significantly lower scores. So those parents, I can totally understand why you wouldn't want to vote Democrat. And the problem with it is, what I don't see, I see very little introspection as to why they nearly lost an election that they should have walked by a million miles. And the worry that I have is that if they say, right, well, let's just go back, normality or normalcy is back, then you're not going to you're not addressing the issues that made people vote for Trump in the first place.
No, and they're not going to. It's clear. I mean, the people he's putting in positions of power are just as often the same people that were under Obama, aren't they? So it's just going to be the same old stuff, isn't it?
Well, I think, in a way, I get it. It was much nicer 10 years ago or 8 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the genie's out of the bottle, isn't it?
No, you can't go back.
I know. I was thinking today, who was someone was talking about? I can't remember what it was. I was listening to some discussion, and I was just thinking back to pre-Brexit time. Oh, I think it was something on talk radio with Neil Oliver, and he was talking about Scottish nationalism. I suppose, in a way, for us, that was kind of the start of it, wasn't it? Because the Scottish independence vote was before the Brexit vote, and so you go back to kind of like 2012, 2013. Yeah, they were happy days, you know. When before pre-Brexit, pre-independence,
pre-social media.
But the problem is, genie's out of the bottle, isn't it?
Yeah. The social media world is a different world, isn't it? And the media world's a different world. They're competing. You know, they've been showing clips just from the last week. This is the you know, talking about Nazi analogies. It's, you know, but and Macron's getting this as well. This is like the Nazis in 1930, in the mid-30s and stuff like that. Nazi, Trump, Nazi, same thing. It's not going anywhere. I mean, I think it was John McCain that it was have you all back in chains. But I think the Mitt Romney one was when Mitt Romney was running and they were trying to label him as a misogynist. And he said something like, what are you talking about? I've got folders of female applicants in my, you know, of people that I've interviewed. And then that was for, oh, he's got binders of females, you know. So then they tried to use that as if he's some sort of sex pest. Now, he's one of their heroes, isn't he? So, you know, forgive me when they say, oh, they like these people, unless they're running against them. They run against them. The only thing that they can do is label them a racist, a sexist, a misogynist, a trans. That's all they do. If they don't have an argument, that's all they throw. And it just, on an intellectual level, to me, it just makes me switch off. And I don't think that's changing. I don't think social media, as you say, those media companies, the New York Times, subscriptions went through the roof when Trump won. And then they became the resistance. I think there's room for journalism, obviously, because I love journalism. But I think there's room for activism as well, because I think things need to be brought to the forefront sometimes. That's how progress is made. The problem with it is you've now got activist journalism. And to me, that's an issue, because I just don't know who to believe anymore. Because people aren't...
I do find that whole kind of resistance movement, them painting themselves as a resistance, kind of quite funny when you think about, well, so someone said the other day that it's like, why is it that the CIA and the FBI are against Trump? You've got to think about that. I often ask people on the left, why do they think that they're against Trump? Because I can guarantee you it's not the same reason that your lefty mates against Trump for sending mean tweets about Mexicans or grabbing women's pussy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of makes me giggle a bit that there's a resistance. All these people are resistance. Well, there's a fucking lot of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like we said, you know what I mean? The entirety of that, like, elite upper class are the resistance.
Ooh, politics, culture, everything. Yeah, you're not fighting the majority. You are the majority. But it's that trust thing, isn't it, Jules? It's like, Who do you trust? I don't trust anyone having an argument anymore, you know, on any subject unless they're biased. I thought of it the other day. I sometimes think of these quite good one-liners. But I thought of a biased mind rarely discovers the truth. Because to discover the truth, you need to be like a judge, don't you? You need to look at both sides of an argument and weigh it up. But a biased mind is not interested in anything. The biased mind is either the defence barrister or the prosecution barrister. The judge is the one that what takes both into account. 90% of what I'm seeing is either the defence or the accuser. And what happens is you just cherry pick your evidence. And that's why in most of the case I'm not on board. But you know, a lot of it, I think we've spoke a lot about the culture wars and stuff. And, you know, a lot of this woke stuff that we spoke about. I remember listening back to one of our podcasts a little while back, and I just dropped the phrase critical race theory, assuming that people knew about it. And that was about a year ago. That must have been about a year ago. And I still think now that was naive, because I still think only a handful of people know about what critical race theory is. But there's also critical gender theory, critical theories in general, seem to be quite a far left view of things. It is a theory, and it's being pumped out in universities. And it used to be a bit of a giggle when it was just universities, but it seems now it's seeping into every area, every kind of human resources department, the universities, its schools, and what happened was, since George Floyd, it's kind of sent it into overdrive. And now there are comments coming from all sorts of areas that should be independent. So all these groups, these authority groups that you should trust, like the American Psychological Association, American Medical Association, World Health Organization, All those people seem to be that I can't trust anymore. So, you know, there was the American Psychological Association a few months ago was talking about, they did a big study on toxic masculinity, one of my favourite subjects. But what it wasn't even about toxic masculinity, it was normal masculinity. And they were saying that normal masculinity is a real problem for males. And I just, you know, and what examples of it? It's like stoicism. They were talking about stoicism. Now, I think stoicism keeps me sane. The theory of stoicism is the old Stoics, the Romans and the Greeks. It's a way of thinking where you don't catastrophize. You don't automatically put the worst possible connotation on something. You try and look at it from all points of view. And basic psychology treatment now is CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and CBT is all about stoicism. Really, it's all about not catastrophizing, not assuming the worst always. Yet they're now saying that is a problem. It is problematic, and basic masculinity is a problem now. Look, there's good masculinity, there's toxic masculinity, there's good femininity, but there's also toxic femininity as well. Yet the American Psychological Association, the board of psychologists, is pumping this out. And then you've got the American Medical Association at the time of George Floyd. Remember the COVID stuff, and there were anti-lockdown people that were protesting. The American Medical Association said to the doctors, nurses, and the country, this is one of the most dangerous things. You mustn't allow people getting into crowds. And then they had people, doctors and nurses, in their PPE coming out with banners ridiculing the people, the anti-lockdown people, and they were made out as heroes because the argument was that street protests are really, really dangerous. Yet a week later George Floyd dies, and a week after that you've got massive amounts of street protests, and the same group of people came out and said, no, it's fine to protest this time because racism is a bigger problem than a pandemic. So straight away, credibility in the American Medical Association, another group of people that you should be able to trust. Then the United Nations, I saw something came out the other day by the United Nations, right? This is official United Nations Twitter feed. The COVID-19 pandemic is demonstrating what we all know. Millennia of patriarchy have resulted in a male-dominated world with a male-dominated culture which damages everybody, women, men, girls and boys. So that's another someone who's meant to be independent that's been taken over by a minority thinking. And then this one's a good one, right? We listen to I listen to a podcast called The Dark Horse Podcast by two biologists. Brett Weinstein and his wife Heather Haying, and they mix it up with biology and COVID stuff and politics because they're from Portland, so they're a good listen to if you want to know what's going on in Portland and stuff. And she addressed that someone who came to her and said, "Look, this stuff is driving me mad. There is no escape from this stuff." And she said, "Just take a walk. Take a walk in the woods. Go out to nature. Take a walk in the woods." Anyway, a week later, he's come back. He said, "I've been out to the woods and now I've seen a sign in the woods from the Forestry Commission, a big sign, which says, something to do with the heteronormity of the forest. And basically saying that gender and sex is a social construct, so there is no biological backing for male and female." And and they were using, because slugs can be, that was it, she was saying that slugs can be hermaphrodites, but she made the point that a hermaphrodite is a male and female sexual organ. Therefore, if gender is a social and sex is a social construct, how can you have a female and a male sexual organ? It doesn't make sense. But there's also a sign that says if you damage or take down this sign, you can risk prison or a really high fine. So now you can't even go to the forest to get away from this crap. And I'll guarantee you that if you surveyed the population to say, do you agree with this kind of radical way of thinking? I'd say 90% of people don't. So the 90% of people are being preached to constantly by these people. And and no wonder people are switching off. There is nowhere to trust. Now, you can argue fake.
And it's that kind of stuff as well. Yeah. Is it, I don't know how big a percentage, but I'm sure it has an effect on the election, doesn't it?
Of course it does. Yeah.
Like when I mean, falsely, I wouldn't claim that Trump would be an antidote to any of that because he's just full of shit. But at least he's willing to stand up against the elements of it, and vocally stand up against elements of it, because there's no other like Western leaders that would go anywhere near it with a barge pump.
No, because as soon as Boris even mentions the Churchill statue, the Guardian and everyone, oh look, he's lowering himself to imagine James O'Brien imaginary fights on culture wars because he hasn't got anything else. So you go there, you get attacked. I mean, I listened to the BBC, my global news podcast the other day, and then they had this interview with this woman who's a 35-year-old virgin. And because she's a 35-year-old virgin, she's got something to say. She's got something that she should be put on the news for, to talk about patriarchy and all this sort of stuff. And I thought, you wouldn't have Anne Widdecombe on there, a 35-year-old. She's probably an 80-year-old virgin. So does that mean she is an 80-year-old virgin? If age and virginity is something to be kind of lauded, then surely she's got 55 years on, or 45 years on the other woman. Why aren't you treating her with the amount of respect? Because her, you ridicule. Probably she's ridiculed for other valid reasons, I know. But it's the same sort of bias, isn't it? You know, if you're if you're preaching left-wing codswallop, what I think is codswallop theory, yeah, let's give her a pedestal. But if you're right-wing but sexy codswallop theory, you're ridiculed. And that's fine. Ridicule them both, though. Can't we just ridicule you? Just because you haven't had it, it doesn't mean that your voice is any more valid than someone that has, surely. Anyway, you're bombarded with this stuff. So, anyway, my brother has just signalled to me because he had a delivery at some point, and he asked me if I could do him a favour, that when he signals, if I can waffle along. And I, to be honest, grabbed that. I'm very confident that I can waffle on with that sort of stuff. So my point is that continuously, if you're going to kind of get, if it, we talk about fake news and how we can stop fake news and all these conspiracy websites. We talk about conspiracy websites and all that sort of stuff, screwing up young and brainwashing young minds. You can stop all the Alex Jones you want. But unless you're going to stop all this madness from within your own group, you're still going to push people away. Because I think this stuff is really repellent. And I think it just leads to cults.
And it always exists, doesn't it? It's not going to... I mean, obviously, the internet has made it easily accessible, much more easily accessible.
Yeah.
But it'll always exist. You're not going to be able to push people away that much. I mean, it's, you've also got examples of like, the, what was I thinking of the other day? There was, I was on Facebook, I think it was about the same time that you had that issue with your Facebook feed, wasn't it? No, Twitter.
Oh, what? When I stupidly...
Last week.
Stuck up for, I didn't even stick up for it, it's just an observation of the ugliness for, what's his name, Neil... Andrew Neil,
yeah. Just tell that quick story again.
Yeah, well, Andrew Neil, I can't even remember what he tweeted. I don't even know what it was in relation to. And someone accused him of being a paedophile because his... And I thought, well, that's a bit strong, isn't it? I don't follow this left-wing, you know, social media, so I don't know. But they accused him of being a paedophile. I thought, that's a bit strong. And he answered back and threatened to sue, and the guy apologised. But then all of a sudden there was this pile-in. And the reason why he's accused of being a paedophile is because Ghislaine Maxwell, who was the partner of... what's his name? Harvey Weinstein. The one with the island or whatever his name is. It'll come to us in a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually you're my Epstein. Yeah, you're my good safety net. You are. I'm useless at remembering stuff. So Jeffrey Epstein. So she had Andrew Neil's number in his phone book, but not once, twice apparently. And it's like, yeah, well, is that evidence? Is this what we go for someone who's now a paedophile? So I thought, right, I'm going to ignore what I posted was. It's just a little help looking at the responses is a healthy reminder to see what a cesspit Twitter is, that you can accuse someone of the worst possible crime on zero evidence just because you don't agree with him politics. Yeah, and I also thought that there's a definite correlation between the ugliness and venom towards an individual and the how it correlates with the power of that opponent's voice. And I think Andrew Neil is a brilliant voice when he interviews people. He slaughtered Ben Shapiro, and he kicked what's her name's ass as well, you know, the black lady, the young black lady, Candice Owens.
Candice Owens. Monroe or whatever.
Candice Owens. Yeah, he slapped her. Look, I don't want a sexist.
Did he?
Whatever. Yeah, he did an interview with her when she was basically saying the election was a fix. So he's critical of both sides. I think he's a great journalist. So I then stupidly tweeted saying what a cesspit it is that with no evidence you can accuse someone of the worst crime simply because you don't like their politics. And then I went to bed and I woke up to so many responses. And then I thought, well, I'm not going to get getting involved with the ones attacking me because now I'm a paedophile apologist. You know, I sound like, why am I sticking up for paedophiles? And it's like, then at some point in the day, I stupidly said, evidence, please. And then that was it. It was like like the floodgates had opened. And there weren't that many comments, but then there were loads of likes of the comments, and there was loads of little threads and roots and branches going all over the place on it. And one thing, there must have been 200 people involved, and not one of them had their real name. They were all cartoon superheroes or cartoon SpongeBob or cartoon whatever. And when I was asking for evidence, they were coming up with this madness. It was just a photocopy of a number and a bar thing, you know. Yeah, nothing, yeah. Nothing where it came from, all right? You know, and it's like, and then you'd start looking into these people and what they tweeted. And there they are sticking up for Jeremy Corbyn. So someone who they support, and there is quite a lot of evidence, if not personal evidence against him, but certainly loads of evidence that he didn't do his job for stamping it out for a major political party. That's not, even though there's mountains of evidence, that doesn't count. However, a name in a phone book of Ghislaine Maxwell, who's a daughter of a media magnate, who had a phone number of a senior media figure in her phone book, that's evidence. Would you want that as evidence if you're in court? Is that evidence that you fuck little girls and little boys because your phone is in a number? A book that's probably got thousands of numbers in it, by the way. This isn't people who's viewed stuff. These are and put credit card details into access child abuse. You know, this is a phone number. You know, she's a socialite. I suspect these people want a broad range of contacts to see who they can use for whatever at any point. And yeah. I've heard loads
of people. The responses were crazy, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, then, insane.
Then, about that same time, so I kind of got a bit down looking at that. And then about the same day, I popped on Facebook and I've there's this link that the Metro put up, and it was the day after. There was this whole, the daily nonsense story where the BBC had banned the playing of the original Pogue song.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because of the word faggot, and of course that sets off the culture war again, doesn't it? And it's left and right and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, so the Metro had linked to an article where they had Lawrence Fox has started his own political party now in the UK, and he wants to get back to kind of like, I suppose, like small C conservative value, pride in Britain, whatever. And he was critical of the BBC's decision. And then the Pogues official Twitter page tweeted him back, slagging him off, calling him an effing whatever. And then the Metro had linked to that, which had then set off tons of comments in their Facebook page. And it's like, what have we unleashed here? We've unleashed this nonsense of venom and horribleness. It's just a really cheap, and it just made me think, that's a really cheap, shoddy way to run a business, isn't it? That you claim to be a media business.
Yeah.
That you claim is the news, a newspaper. That's what you do.
All you're doing is poking people. I used to do it when I used to be in company of two friends that would never get on. I'd often, you know, when you're out for a drink or whatever, you know, all you got to do is say something to get them having a go at each other. And when it dies down, you just stoke it a little bit.
And then
bit
walk
more.
Away.
Oh, no, last week on. So that was what I was worried about lockdown, is that I know when there's lockdown, I tend to be more time on social media. And I've got better at not engaging. But last week I did, because sometimes it irritates me. So someone had posted something on Facebook about. That was it, about vaccines. Don't trust vaccines. Yeah, this bloke is an educator in a university, by the way. Don't trust vaccines and stuff. And I just put a photo of that very famous photo of the two kids, one who had a smallpox vaccine and one who didn't. And then one is just covered in spots. Really, really disturbing photo. And the other one's clean. And I've checked, and you fact check it on whatever it is, the fact check website. And it's true. It's a factual photo of someone that was immunised and another kid that wasn't. And I just posted that, said, look, I know which one I prefer to be. And then you started getting some bloke back that started to push back. And then I thought, well, hold on. But that was it. But what he'd done was he'd obviously Googled to see whether or not there's any adverse effects to smallpox vaccine. And there were a handful of this paper that he sent me. There was a handful of people that had a bad effect. As if, look, there's evidence for you, you know. And it's like, I don't think, if you, look, I'm not a medical person myself, but I don't think you could have any medical treatment that doesn't have a small amount of downside. And you've got to weigh up the risk. I said, but you've sent me something that talks about a handful of bad reactions as if it's some sort of evidence. However, it's eradicated one of the most deadly diseases and ugliest diseases in human history, probably saving millions of lives. This is the level of argument. And because then I reacted to that, spoke about vaccines on my page. Now, I think I dug up a load of old cartoons from Victorian times where where people were sceptical about vaccines. And someone linked me into something else, which was an article that someone posted on Facebook to say that the British cabinet were all under house arrest because of COVID lies. And it was getting thousands of likes and shares and stuff like that. And it was an article, right? And I thought, well, you know, when you think that don't sound right. And I've looked up this article. Man, it was written by a guy called the Reverend Darrell Hines from Milwaukee, right? And then you go, I thought, I'll Google this Darrell Hines to see who he is. Because it's not hard, is it? You've got it all at your fingertips. And then it gave a biography of this Darrell Hines. And it said that he died in 1981, but when he got hit by lightning, right? And now he survives. And this reverend, a black reverend from Milwaukee, who says it's all a hoax, and people are sending me this as evidence. There you go, answer that. And it's like, God, is this what you got? And I don't know, it's just bizarre. Oh yeah, and then when I got involved in that a little bit, someone said to me in bold writing, science is a lie. And it's like, God, sitting there in your house with your electricity on your mobile phone, do you know what I mean? It's like, science is a lie. Oh. So yeah. Listen, there was this thing, I can't remember where I picked it up, but I think this is this philosophical thing that a philosopher once was on a ship in a storm, right? When they were before planes. So he was probably going over to America and they were caught in a storm and he was terrified. Yet he looked at the wildlife, like the pigs and the cows that were being taken, and they didn't give a shit. And he was saying, is it better to live your life with an ignorance of a cow and just be oblivious to the shit, or is it better to be, we have a level of intelligence that you see the shit but are affected by the shit? So sometimes I'm jealous of the pigs or of my dog, my new dog. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I just don't have to put up with this mess.
Yeah, but the thing is, the pigs and the dogs ain't going to be able to save the shit.
I suppose. Anyway, on that note. It's not often we end up on a light, jovial note, is it? But no. Maybe we'll get to the other one before
Christmas. The downfall of Trump, that's what it is.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, it's all a bit of a relief. Look, we hopefully things are died down. I'm not confident. I'm not sure he's going away, because that's the thing. I thought you would have had a lot more Republicans turn against him. And the issue that I think is that some of the points he made are quite valid points. You know, everybody kept saying he was going to definitely start a war because wars will win you elections. He didn't. Everyone said that Iran was going to blow up when he bombed the Soleimani. It didn't.
Yep.
Everyone said that you can't get peace in the Middle East without sorting the Palestine and Israel first. And I'm not saying that isn't still a gaping wound, but there's been quite a lot of deals done between people that were once hostile that are now less hostile. And the fact of it was that he had a fit when asked 2 weeks before the election, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? 56% of people said yes, and that was the highest for 20 years. Now, we still lost, which is why I think it was a referendum on him as an individual. But I think, still think there's a case that jobs have been going abroad. The working classes had got, you know, income had gone up in the last 4 years, and immigration is still an issue. And I genuinely think, if Democrats think that now we can put all that to bed and go back to normal, I think you will get another Trump or someone like Trump, because I think that they see that as a winning thing. I mean,
it wouldn't surprise me if he runs again. You know?
Oh God.
I mean, chaos, but yeah. Look, just think about it. I think he's like 4 years younger than Biden.
Yeah.
And he's a lot fucking, I don't know how he's lively. I don't know what drugs he's on, but Jesus Christ, the guy was on a fucking, like he had COVID, a month ago?
Yeah.
And then he came away from that a week later doing three fucking, like, shows a day, wasn't he?
Yeah. No, I know.
He's like just some headline act for an hour at a time, just ad-libbing, loose on stage. So he's got some serious energy behind him. So if he keeps up the good health for the next couple of years, it's only like 2-3 years before they start running again. Do you know what I mean? The whole media circus show in America is at least a year long, isn't it?
Well, the sad thing is that the Republicans have got some quite impressive people, I think. I've heard quite a few of them on different interviews. I like, you know, I don't know that much about them, but who's the guy with the eye patch, the ex soldier?
Dan Crenshaw,
I think he's great. I think the other lady we spoke about before, who got rid of the Confederate flags after the Dylann Roof shooting.
Yes.
And look, America's a crazy place, isn't it? I sadly would like it if what I think politics should be is try and reach out to different groups. America is becoming more and more, whites are going to be a minority at some point. The Democrats, I would have a lot, the Republicans, I'd have a lot more respect if they reached out to those communities, because it's proved that they're there to be won. But what they tend to do, I think, is try and stop those people voting. And I think that's an ugly side of politics. But as you say, just to finish off, I wrote a list the other day of stuff that's happened in America in the last 10 years, right? Just to say that this isn't Trump, yeah? So in 2009, you had Obama. 2011, you had Occupy Wall Street as a reaction to the big bailout. 2012, you had Trayvon Martin. Obama's comments on it, saying that Trayvon could have been a child of mine, and Sandy Hook, all in that year. Zimmerman got found not guilty of killing Trayvon Martin, which started off with BLM, Black Lives Matter, started from there. Then there was Michael Brown shot in Ferguson, and Eric Gardner, which then kind of fueled Black Lives Matter. Then in 2000, that was 2014, 2015, same-sex marriage. Then Caitlyn Jenner came out as gay and was a kind of Sports Illustrated sportswoman of the year, even though he hadn't competed for 30. Yeah, Dylann Roof killed all those people in the black church. Confederate flag issue. Recordings of police killing Walter Scott. Racism protests in universities spread like wildfire. Then there was the Orlando shooting, where Mateen geezer killed 56 gay people. Two more police killing videos came out, and then after that, five police got shot and murdered in Dallas at a protest. Then the Colin Kaepernick stuff happened, where he was taking a knee. And then the North Carolina trans bathroom stuff. And then there were big issues about the Dakota pipeline, oil pipeline, going through Native American land. And then Donald Trump got voted in. Yeah, so all that happened before Donald Trump. But when Donald Trump came in, that's when it started to get a bit twisted. Because then you had the lies about the inauguration and the crowds. And then that led to the Women's March because of grabbing by the pussy comments. And then there was the Muslim ban. Then there were violent protests in US university. And then all the banning of speakers. Then he banned trans people from the military. Then there was Charlottesville, when that Helen Heyer, or Haying, I'm not sure, get mixed up between the two, who got ran over and murdered by that person. And then there was his comments, fine people on both sides. Then the Las Vegas mass shooting, which is the biggest shooting in American history. And then there was Me Too after Harvey Weinstein. That was all. And then 2018, you had the Parkland shooting, school walkouts, and all that is all coming with social media, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas we hope it's all going to quiet down. I'm less sure. I don't think we're going to run out of stuff to talk about, but maybe we give America a miss next time, unless something big happens, and maybe talk about something a bit closer to home.
Yeah.
Okay, you all right? We all right? We done?
Yeah, all good.
Okay, I'll just say look, thanks for listening, whoever does. I think the numbers go up, which is quite nice. Just subscribe if you listen to us if you like it. There's a little button there that you can press. I mean, I send it out to a few people, stick it on Facebook, but it's quite interesting. I mean, you never were big on numbers and stuff, and I don't want to chase numbers, because I think if you chase numbers, you kind of maybe your direction goes in a way that you might not like. So we're not number chasing, but you know, if you want to comment, it's always nice to know that you know there are people listening. And when you sometimes look at the geography, it's a bit weird, because we've got listeners in Belgium and America and places like Thailand and stuff like that. It's kind of strange. It's like, who do we know there? So yeah, look, if you like listening, give it a like and a comment if you want, or subscribe, and then we'll see you in a few weeks' time, maybe just before Christmas.
Yep.
If it's not banned. All right, mate. All right.
Speak to you soon.
Yeah, okay then. Thanks. See ya.
Bye-bye.